Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we are here for our Thyroid Revive and Thrive class, Part 5. And this is where we're going to do thyroid balancing step by step. I'm going to teach you how to evaluate, update, and take charge of your success. And we're going to go through a lot of the stuff we've been through before, but we're going to pull it all together, summarize it, and give you a step-by-step that you can follow. Let me just say before we begin that I put together a pretty amazing booklet. Like, it's about 25, 30 pages long of this step-by-step process for balancing your thyroid. And it's something that you can print out and keep handy and review. It's not going to take the place of all the videos and other materials in there, but it's going to pull it together and summarize it. The rest of the materials, the videos and the audios and the checklists and all, are giving you the detail and helping it to cement in your mind how this old thyroid works and how you can take care of it. When you understand how it works and what kind of things can go wrong with it, you're better in a position to be able to take care of it. So let's just jump right in and begin. Before we begin, I want to make sure that you're aware that none of what I'm sharing is to replace a qualified practitioner that you're working with. None of it's medical advice. I'm educating you about the care and feeding of your own thyroid gland, and whatever medical advice you've been getting, you need to bounce these ideas off your doctor and make sure that it's in accord with what they want for you. If you're working with a doctor that doesn't think that nutrition has anything to do with thyroid function, that doesn't think that toxins in the environment have anything to do with thyroid function, that doesn't think that the state of your gut doesn't have anything to do with thyroid function, I highly recommend that you seek out a different physician, because they are clearly not keeping up with the research. So that's all I'm going to say. If that's your case, then it may be time to find another physician that will work with you. And if you can't find another doctor to work with you, then it's in your best interest to really own the material that we're teaching here, because you're going to be your own best advocate. So let's just get started. At a glance, where have we been? Where are we going? We started with assessments. That's where we taught you about how to look at temperatures and how to do little questionnaires and come up with an idea of where your thyroid's at in the spectrum. We looked at how your thyroid works and what can go wrong. You know, a little bit about the anatomy and physiology, and then what's called in medicine the pathophysiology. What are the things that can go wrong? So you kind of understand and can get a sense of what might be going on with your own thyroid. The third part was learning how to protect your thyroid from harm, because as we talked about, it's a really delicate little piece of tissue sitting there, and it's very subject to environmental toxins, radiation, and a whole host of medications, and we went through that in detail. Part four, we looked at all the foods, the herbs, and the nutrients for pulling it all together, for giving your thyroid support. And finally, in this part, part five, we're going to be looking at balancing your thyroid. So we're going to look at step by step. We're going to pull in components of the other four parts of the program. And we're going to add a twist to it in terms of how you can step by step evaluate it. We've got a checklist, a chart for you to follow. We've got step by step stuff for you to go through, step by step processes to go through. And it's not an overnight thing. Although you could see change pretty quickly, we've already heard of people seeing changes just by changing a few of their habits. But what we want you to do is learn how to evaluate, update your plan, and then take charge of your own success. Not leave it in the hands of your doctor, not continue to just take thyroid medication that you've been taking for 15 years and hasn't seemed to really do the trick. We're taking a new look at this. Not to say that you need to or can even throw away the medication, but what if you could make that medication work for you and actually work? Then that's good. So the goal of this is not to get off all medication, although that would be a nice thing. Even if you don't get off the medication, it's to be able to put into place diet, lifestyle, supplementation, herbal things, environmental things that will actually help your thyroid to work better. And whether or not it needs extra hormone, well, that doesn't matter. What you need is to have a well-rounded, well-functioning thyroid gland. So are you ready? Let's go on. So let's look at patterns of thyroid imbalance. These are some of the hypothyroid imbalance. There's also hyperthyroid, but we haven't really been discussing that. Hyperthyroid isn't a totally different beast. A lot of the stuff that we're talking about here could help balance the hyperthyroidism, but the herbs would be different. Well, we're going to look at these primary patterns. Hypothyroid, that's primary, meaning the thyroid just ain't working. For some reason, it's not doing its job. It's not producing the right amount of hormone. The next one is sometimes called secondary hypothyroidism, or pituitary and hypothalamic hypothyroidism. In general, what that means is that the thyroid's functioning just fine, but the masters, the pituitary and the hypothalamus, aren't doing their job of stimulating it to wake up. So it's kind of sleeping because it hasn't been woken up and told that it has work to do. The next one we're looking at is autoimmune thyroiditis. And that's where the body, your immune system, is attacking your thyroid for some reason. And the thing about autoimmune and looking at it is really we want to understand why. Why did the immune system get so off track that it starts to attack your own tissue? And if it's attacking your thyroid, chances are good that it's attacking other parts of your body because there's a global problem. So the steps with autoimmune are a little bit different from the others, and we'll go through those in detail. Then there's what we call thyroid underconversion. If you recall what we learned in part two and how the thyroid works, is that there's two hormones, T4 and T3. Your thyroid gland produces mostly T4. It produces a little bit of T3, maybe 10% of what it produces is T3. But the active part is the T3. So in order for the T4 to be active and actually work in your body, it has to be converted. And if you're under-converting, I mean you're not efficiently converting from T4 to T3, you're going to have symptoms of thyroid problems, even if your T4 and your TSH on your blood tests look perfectly normal. And this is a very common problem, and it's most commonly overlooked in standard medical practice. It's just not looked at by those who have been trained to look at TSH, and if it's high, then give the person some thyroid T4 hormone. Now, if your problem isn't that you're not making enough, your problem is actually that you're not converting enough, then that approach is not going to work. And that might be why you've been taking medication for many years and it hasn't been working. So thyroid underconversion is very common. Thyroid overconversion is less common. Another one that is an issue is the thyroid binding globulin, which is that little protein that carries the thyroid around in the blood. We don't want to just produce a bunch of thyroid hormone and have it all be active when it's produced. You'd be a basket case. You'd be just jittery and hyper and not feeling too good. So we have a protein that carries it around. Now the protein also helps because, you know, it helps to carry a fat-soluble hormone around in a blood-soluble substance, which is your blood. I mean, a water-soluble substance, which is your blood. So the thyroid binding globulin is what it's called. Globulin is a type of protein, just is what binds to the hormone and carries it around. And if you recall, when we measure your blood, we have either total T3 or total T4 and free T3 and free T4. The total is the total amount of T3 in your blood, combination of bound to thyroid binding globulin and unbound. Majority of it is bound. So what we have is two different problems that can result from the thyroid binding globulin. We can have too much of it, which means it binds up too much of the T4 and T3, and you don't have enough of the free hormone to be active in your system. Or you could have too little of it, which means there's not enough to keep much of the thyroid hormone bound up, and you've got a lot of it running around. And generally, with a decreased thyroid binding globulin, you're going to have symptoms that resemble hyperthyroidism, excessive thyroid, because there's not too much total hormone, but there's too much of the free in relationship to the total. And then finally, we have what's called thyroid receptor resistance, which is the most common, probably rivals or passes autoimmune thyroiditis, because it usually happens in concurrence with autoimmune, is thyroid receptor resistance. It's basically the little cell receptors that are supposed to take in the thyroid hormone so that each cell can use the thyroid hormone. They're broken, basically. They're tired. They're resisting taking it up. They can't take it in. Very, very, very common problem. And as you remember, the thyroid hormone is responsible for what? Your metabolic rate. How quickly does the cell uptake oxygen and convert it and use that, combine it with glucose, go through the Krebs cycle and create basically energy and heat. So if it's not working properly, you're going to be sluggish, you're going to be tired, and you're going to gain weight because your metabolism is slowed down. So that's an overview. Now what we're going to go through is a little bit more detail. This is what I put in as overview of primary thyroid nutrition. This is like mostly, just about every single type of thyroid manifestation is going to benefit from you addressing these issues. So even if you've not gotten very far in the course and you haven't assessed where you're at, these are some of the nutrients that can help you regardless of where you are. Making sure you get enough vitamin A. Now, beta carotene converts to vitamin A, and all your plant-based foods are rich in beta carotene. However, you may have a problem with a genetic malformation called a SNP, where you can't convert the beta carotene efficiently to vitamin A. In some cases, you might have to take some of that. B vitamins, which are found in abundance in your green leafy vegetables and your nuts and your seeds. And some people burn through their B vitamins really quickly because of stressful situations, traumas, etc., and need to take a supplement. And vitamin Z, which unfortunately most people seem to need to supplement because there's problems with the sun and there's problems with the amount of sun that people get, and everybody's using sunscreen and covering themselves up when they're outdoors. And a lot of people have vitamin C receptor issues, genetically impaired. So vitamin D is important. Of the minerals, the key ones are iodine, selenium, zinc, iron, and magnesium. These are the critical ones for thyroid function. Iodine is the key one because it's the core of the thyroid hormone. But there's a lot of controversy about iodine because some studies have indicated that too much iodine can aggravate Hashimoto's, the autoimmune. And too much iodine can certainly cause the thyroid to enlarge and cause something called a goiter. So iodine is one of those, you know, double-edged swords. You got to be careful. And most minerals are like that. Just with iodine, it's pretty obvious. So you want to get the just right amount of iodine in the system. And for many people, just taking in sea vegetables like kelp and dulse and bladderwrack and things like that can give you enough as food. And some people need to supplement. And then selenium, which is one of the few that you can actually get in food in abundant amounts, like in RDA amounts. You can take Brazil nuts, but some people have a disparity in their fat absorption, so they don't digest the Brazil nuts all that well and get the selenium released. Some people have problems with stomach acid, so they're not able to unbind the selenium from its carrier. And sometimes the soils are just variable, and some Brazil nuts have more than others. So it's variable to get it that way, but it's a good starting point. And if you're severely selenium deficient, you probably want a supplement. And then zinc is a really hard one. And I would say that most people who have chronic fatigue or chronic digestive issues or chronic thyroid issues generally need zinc and need it in supplemental form. And then iron and magnesium as well. Iron, you know, most people get enough of it after menopause, before menopause, not necessarily if you're bleeding a lot during menopause, and that's for women. Very few men are deficient in iron, but I have seen it. And then magnesium is considered to be one of the most common nutrient or mineral deficiencies because soils are depleted, because people aren't eating enough green leafy vegetables, because people are eating a lot of foods that cause blood sugar imbalances, and magnesium is needed to carry the blood sugar across the cells. So there's a lot there. Antioxidants we'll talk a little bit more about when we get into your autoimmune, but glutathione and superoxide dismutase are the most important ones because they're so hard to get and they get depleted really easily in our toxic world. Three amino acids that tend to be most important for thyroid: tyrosine, phenylalanine, and arginine. Tyrosine is the core, along with iodine, of thyroid hormone. Three iodines, one tyrosine. Four iodines, one tyrosine. And phenylalanine is a precursor. Phenylalanine is an essential amino acid, meaning our bodies can't make it no matter how many raw materials we have. Tyrosine is a non-essential or a conditionally essential amino acid because we can convert phenylalanine into tyrosine, assuming there's enough phenylalanine to meet the needs that we have for phenylalanine. And then arginine, which affects the blood supply and the blood flow. And then herbs, you know, these are just a few, and these are kind of general ones. So if you're not sure where you're at right now, you might pick one of these and just experiment with putting it into an elixir and seeing how you feel with it. Rosemary can be eaten as a food, obviously. And then foods like bladderwrack and kelp, which are your sea vegetables, and absolutely avoiding gluten. If you have a thyroid problem, don't play with fire. Get off the gluten. So this slide alone could keep you busy for a few weeks, just getting going on including some extra different foods into your diet. And you'll get very far. But if you want to get to the ultimate in thyroid help, we're going to look at some steps. So here's my thyroid balancing step by step. You should have copies of these slides, and you can print them out and take notes on them. And you will be getting a copy of this booklet that goes through and details all the stuff that we're talking about here and gives you a little bit more background on it. So, and we're just going to go through these quickly. I'm going to read through these, and then I'm going to go through each one in detail. We have our self-assessments we've already talked about. We'll go through what those are. We've got foundational thyroid support, which is what are those things that you need to do to support your thyroid regardless of what's really wrong with it. And these are things that are completely overlooked by conventional medicine. In fact, they have no clue that these things are important. We're going to assume that you have and then address thyroid resistance. And this may seem a little weird because I said that was one of the patterns. Well, why do you want to treat thyroid resistance if you don't have it? Here's the risk you run. If you just treat it as one of the other patterns and you go through and you treat all the other patterns, you're not going to know you have thyroid resistance because lab tests are normal. So if you have something else going on in addition to the thyroid resistance, obviously your lab tests are not going to be normal. So I'm just going to have you assume that you have thyroid resistance and do the steps to treat it. Because what happens a lot of times is people go through this whole process of doing the pattern specifics and they get their under conversion where it doesn't look like they're under converting anymore, but they're still having symptoms. And in that case, the thyroid resistance was superimposed. So it's simple stuff that you can do to address the thyroid resistance. And we're going to go through that in a little while. After you've done those three steps, then you can do lab analysis. And I did this in this order because I want to let you people know. I mean, there's some of you who live in states where, you know, doing your own lab test is not allowed, like New York, for example. Some of you live in foreign countries where you have national medicine and they don't necessarily want their patients coming in and saying, hey, doc, I need these lab tests. So you may be in a position where you're stuck with whatever the doctor runs. And if that's the case, there's so much benefit you can get just by doing steps 1, 2, 3. So the lab analysis then allows us to do pattern-specific thyroid support. And the thyroid-specific pattern support lets us get real up close and personal with each type of pattern and the processes that you can do to support that. Then we're going to go through and assess your progress. So these steps 6 and 7 are the steps that many docs, including functional medicine docs, unfortunately, and naturopaths, skip. I'm like, okay, we identified it, go do it, and then you expect that you do that for 3 months, you stop everything, and you're fine. Or not, and you find a new doctor. Well, no, there's specific criteria for reassessing your progress, and I'm going to go through those with you. And then 7 is tweak your program for optimal success. Well, that's okay. So you do this assessment and you come back and there's still a few things off. You're going to change your program or you're not getting the results you thought you should be getting. You're going to change dosages. You're going to change timings of things. You're going to add some new things, take away some other things, look for other food allergies or heavy metals or stuff. And we'll go through what the details are. So these are 7 steps in thyroid balancing. Okay, and if you go through and do these steps, you will have an improvement in your thyroid gland. And it could take several months, depending on how long your thyroid's been out of balance. But I've seen things shift in as little as 3 to 4 to 6 months. I mean, majorly shift. I don't mean just shift like the person doesn't have Hashimoto's anymore, or they go completely off their medication. Just depends on how, you know, what your comfortable pace of moving through this is, and how willing you are to change some of your habits that maybe you've had for a really long time. And maybe, you know, your doctors aren't telling you about changing, so you maybe you're reluctant. So keep it in mind that when you follow, you will have success. You'll see changes. So we're going to go through our thyroid self-assessment, and all of our major topics, our major of the seven steps, are have an orange header. So if you're wondering why I have rainbow colored headers, that's why. The orange ones are the ones that are the major steps. So there's three things that you have access to for self-assessment: your thyroid assessment form, and you're welcome to go back and do that over and over again. It's a hosted quiz on my site, but you can go through it as many times as you want, and I'll share with you in the reassess piece how often I think you should. Then you can take your basal body temperature, a process that was developed by Broda Barnes back in, I think, the 1950s, and basically it's take your body temperature before you get out of bed in the morning, before you get up and feed the baby, before you have sex, before you go to the bathroom. You basically take your temperature at this like zombie state, and you write it down, and you do that for like 4 or 5 days. For women, don't do it when you're in the second half of your menstrual cycle, because it'll naturally be higher. And for men, it doesn't matter, and postmenopausal women, it doesn't matter. And then average body temperature, and this was something that was defined by Wilson, Dennis Wilson, and he calls it the Wilson's temperature syndrome, which is basically, he'll look at your average body temperature starting about 3 hours after you've taken your basal, and you just take that, and you do that every 3 hours, you write it down, you do it for 3 times a day for 3 days, and then you average the whole thing up. If that number shows up to be less than 98.6, or significantly less, the worse you are. So maybe it's 98.7. Yeah, you're in range, right? Within 10% is okay. Not 10%, 0.1%. So let's look at foundational thyroid support. And this is by far the longest, biggest, most challenging piece. But these are the things that have to be in place for thyroid to function. And one of the things I teach to my practitioners is that we do our organ balancing and our gland balancing in a specific order, because there's so many things that rely on other things. And as we go through this, you'll see why. We look at the foundational things. We look at a non-toxic environment. We look at sleep. We look at all these things because it's so important for the function. And this is true of the thyroid because it's dependent on other organ and gland systems. So we, first and foremost, you need to avoid toxic exposures, and then optimize detoxification. You know, do periodic cleanses, whether that be just not eating for a day and just juicing or doing green smoothies, or whether that be just getting rid of your processed foods and starting to eat whole foods. But optimizing detoxification is super important. But avoiding toxic exposures is just as important, or even more important sometimes, because you just can't keep throwing fuel on the fire and expecting to be able to put it out. The next piece is, and I'm just going to go through these quick and then we'll go through them in more detail. Decrease and manage stress. The next thing you're going to do is optimize digestion, balance your blood sugar, support your adrenals, get good quality sleep, do gentle exercise, eat whole, fresh foods, antioxidant-rich, and drink thyroid elixirs. Add key nutrients and herbs that support the thyroid in general or your particular type. Add, enjoy fresh air and sunshine, and have fun. So these are all important pieces, and we'll look at them. And these are all in detail in your guidebook. So avoid the toxic exposures. Yep, some of these things you might have already phased out, and if so, great. And if not, go through this as a checklist. It's listed in your document. And check it off, and then put in place processes to help. Tap water, get a filter if you don't have one. Bromine, fluoride, and chloride. Identify all the places where those live, and we did that in part 2. so you can review that. Avoiding pesticides and GMOs. Choosing organic or fresh-grown food where you know that they haven't done any spraying and GMO cropping. Avoid preservatives, things you can't pronounce in food. Avoid artificial colors and flavors. Avoid irradiated food. Bisphenol A, BPA, which is found in a lot of plastics, you know, Tupperware containers and in water bottles and things like that. Triclosan is another toxic exposure. Triclosan is a hand sanitizer. You know they have those outside of every supermarket now. These little places where you can sanitize your hands. That's all antibacterial soap, which contains triclosan, which is very dangerous to your thyroid gland. So stop using those little wipes at the supermarket. If you really feel like you need to do that, carry along your own, you know, little napkins that are saturated in water, or go into the bathroom and wash your hands when you get there. Radioactive iodine, so those of you who've had contrast therapy or have had some imaging done for your thyroid. X-rays and CT scans in general, so high amount of radiation, especially CT scans, can affect your thyroid. Always wear a thyroid apron when you're getting your thyroid, when you're getting an X-ray, if you have to get an X-ray. A whole list of medications that I gave you in part two, and then of course smoking. All of these things are toxic to your thyroid gland and need to be identified and removed. Remember, we're all in the foundations. You gotta manage the stress. So first and foremost is slow down. Are you going at rapid pace and barely make it through the day and feel exasperated and exhausted by the end of the day? Well, slowing it down a little bit. Doing some breathing and appreciation breaks are super important. And we've gone through this. We gave you a 30-day stress transformation program. If you haven't already gotten it or started doing it, then go ahead and download it and start doing it. It's super important. Or sign up and get the daily emails that tell you about it. Meditation, if you know how to do that. Getting support, joining a support group, or having people in your life who support you and help you and help take care of the kids if you need it, or help you with making dinner or going shopping or any things that you need help with. Yoga is awesome as well. You know, yoga and meditation are wonderful if you know how to do them and you have the time to do it. But for me, those take too much time, and there are things I can't do and commit to doing on a daily basis. But I can commit to heart math because it's short and sweet, and I could do it in very little intervals that I have throughout the day. Tapping is another thing. I do a little bit of tapping. I'm not the world's foremost expert in it, but tapping is a way of just giving a little stimulation to acupuncture points, and that can help your thyroid dramatically. Other things that can help you manage stress would be counseling, forgiveness, which is critical. So many of us are so tense and stressed out because there's somebody we need to forgive and we haven't done it. And then cleaning up your diet and environment, which we're going to go through in much more detail. But we don't realize that your diet and your environment are toxic. So you might be eating foods that are introducing toxins into your system, or the foods that aren't being digested properly because of a digestive imbalance and creating toxins in your system. Optimize digestion. We have a whole 7-week program to help people optimize their digestion, and we'll be doing it in September. So if that's something you want to go further with and you've identified that that's a contributing factor, you'll get information on how you can join us then. You want to eat in a calm, relaxed state. Deep breathing and appreciation. This is super important for your digestion. I know you've all heard of leaky gut, but do you have leaky gut? Chances are good that if you have a thyroid issue, an autoimmune thyroid issue in particular, that you probably have some leaky gut. You want to start your day with a cleansing beverage. This is a great way to start your day to get your digestion moving. I tend to like water, a little bit of lemon, some lemon oil, cayenne is possible, mint oil, anything like that can be done to make this morning beverage. And you drink that before you eat any food to just cleanse your digestive tract. Drink lukewarm water half an hour before each meal to optimize digestion. Take something called bitters, which would be bitter foods, bitter juices. Chew thoroughly, eat slowly, and take digestive enzymes. And some people need to follow food combining or food sequencing rules, meaning that your food, certain foods don't digest well together. And if you find that even when you're eating really good solid foods, there's certain combinations that are off for you, do some research and investigation and discover which ones they are and just don't do them that way, or sequence your meals. You know, have the fruit first or vegetables first and sequence it with the other foods. Liver and gallbladder support are important. You know, if you don't have a good proper functioning liver or gallbladder, there's no way you're going to have healthy digestion, and there's no way you're going to have healthy thyroid function. There's a whole process for healing inflammation and leaky gut, and that's beyond the scope of this class. Like I said, we have another class that we're doing in the fall, and we also take you through all of this organ and gland balancing in our year-long ERC program. Probiotics. You want to eliminate pathogens, the bad guys, and replace them with the good guys. And some of the culprits in the allergens are gluten and casein, which are proteins found in wheat and dairy products. And then finally, colon cleansing is not a bad idea to do on a regular basis. You know, maybe once a month you go get a colonic, or you give yourself an enema just to keep things clean. So optimizing digestion is critical for thyroid function. So if you're jumping in and want to just know what herbs to take and your digestion is causing you a nightmare, you may need to stop and go back and do digestion. And even if you don't have overt digestive symptoms, you might have digestive symptoms, because a lot of times it just affects the brain. Bad digestion affects the brain. So we're going to balance blood sugar. You know, so a lot of you have been through my Before Be Gone blood sugar balancing program, and some of you have kept up with testing your blood sugar and kept up with taking in only foods that keep your blood sugar steady. So here's a few tips. Again, we have a whole 9-week, 12-week program that goes through all this, which we'll do in the fall. Avoid refined foods, and that is bread, but it's also whole wheat bread or whole grain bread, like whole millet bread. All of that stuff is kind of refined, and it brings your blood sugars up if you're sensitive. Eat whole low glycemic foods. Keep your blood sugar measurements going. Like, if you've never done blood sugar measuring, you can do that. If you don't get your blood sugar balanced, your thyroid's not going to get balanced. So testing your own blood sugar and keeping it within a tight control range is super important. There are certain nutrients that help to improve your body against insulin resistance, which is a imbalance in the blood sugar where the cells become resistant, just like thyroid resistance, it's insulin resistance. And to improve the insulin sensitivity, there's some of those nutrients I listed as basic ones. In addition, there's chromium. So chromium, magnesium, DHA, these are all important. DHA is a fatty acid. These are all super important. Lipoic acid, it's a bunch of them that help to actually improve your insulin sensitivity. Spacing your meals 4 to 6 hours or more apart, super important. No eating within 3 hours of going to bed. Sleep 8 hours a night or more, and exercise and manage stress. So these are all things that you do with balancing blood sugar. So we see some overlap, right? Managing stress is going to come through. Managing stress is one of the most important things you're going to do to protect your thyroid. It's going to show up in all the different balancing systems as well. And then support your adrenals. You do need support your adrenals. The first thing to do, of course, is to de-stress. That takes some load off. But when you're in a state of adrenal fatigue, it's important not to restrict salt, because your body's losing sodium and other minerals and electrolytes. So it's a good idea to not restrict it. And it doesn't mean to go hog wild and, you know, you'd have a container of salt every day, but moderation still. Avoid eating within 3 hours of bedtime. That's good for adrenals and blood sugar. Start off your day with green protein. I do a low carb, moderate protein and fat breakfast with plenty of omega-3s. Don't allow yourself to become too hungry. This is all obvious stuff, but these are important for the adrenals. Whenever your body perceives a stress, like, we don't have enough food, I'm hungry, I'm so hungry, we don't have enough food, your body goes into starvation mode and slows down the burning of these foods. Gluten-free diet across the board. For those of you who are not already on a gluten-free diet, I highly recommend that you do it. If you're not convinced, then I highly recommend that you go ahead and read up and listen up. Dr. O'Brien did a really good summit. I think it's drreedamarie.com/go/glutensummit, as I recall. Go there and sign up for it and watch the audios on it. Lots of great information if you don't really know much about gluten. Even if you do, there's a lot of great information there. Caffeine and alcohol are stimulants and affect the adrenals. And then just say no to refined foods because they don't keep your blood sugar balanced. And when you don't get your blood sugar balanced, remember, as long as you have blood sugar dysregulation, whatever you do to fix your thyroids isn't going to work. Okay? So that's supporting the adrenals. And all of this is in your handouts, and this is stuff we talked about, maybe some of it not to quite the extent that we have. This is a slide showing you the importance of quality sleep. If you don't have quality sleep, your thyroid hormones do not produce well at all. So no intense mental activity within a couple of hours of bedtime. Make sure you do some early in the day activity stuff where you're outside to enhance your melatonin production. Turn off the bright lights in the room as soon as possible after sunset. That's a hard one to do. In some cases, it might be easy if you live alone, or certainly if you and your partner are empty nesters and the kids are off and they're not there. Makes it a lot easier to turn off those bright lights and make it a little bit more of a romantic setting. A nice little neutral bath, 15 to 60 minutes, can help you with sleep. Sleep herbs can help. And just getting horizontal and calling it a mini vacation. Exercise, and I specifically say gentle. If you're working on restoring your thyroid gland, chances are good your adrenals are needing help too. If you're going out and training for a marathon or a half marathon, it's a big stress on your body that's taking away from your healing capacity. So I recommend some nice gentle exercises like walking, like T-Tap. If you've never heard of T-Tap, do a Google search. You'll see plenty on it. It's Teresa Tapp developed this whole system of muscle activation. Burst training. You know, that's where you just do short bursts of intense activity and then you have a break, 2 to 3 minutes in between. And of course, yoga is very gentle, although if you're really good at it, it can be a little strenuous. Stretching, weights, and rebounding. All of these things are good, important for your exercise program for your thyroid. So now we get into the good stuff, right? What do we eat? Okay, whole foods, not fractured foods. Antioxidant rich, not depleted, not refined, whole foods. Gluten-free, dairy-free, allergen-free, lots of green leafy vegetables, sea vegetables, garlic and onions, low glycemic fruits, coconut, omega-3 rich oil, probiotics and prebiotic rich foods. And some of these are things you can make at home, some of them you can buy. Kefir, easy to get at the store. Rejuvelac, not so easy, but not really that desirable. Sauerkraut, very easy. Coconut yogurt, coconut cashew yogurt. And some of these other things that maybe you don't eat on a regular basis, like Jerusalem artichoke and chicory root. The chicory root, they actually help the conversion from T4 to T3. And then getting rid of the dietary stressors, caffeine, alcohol, sugar, and refined foods. So some of the stuff I'm going to say over and over again, and it's going to sink in. You want to add some key nutrients. And these are kind of a lot of the nutrients that can be good for most types of thyroid imbalance. And of course, you don't want to go out and just big, you know, boatload of supplements and start taking everything as supplements. Get what you can from food. Educate yourself about what you can get from food. And then go ahead and supplement with the difference. Okay, so I won't go through them all in detail because it'll take all night to explain each one. But vitamin A, B complex, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, selenium, zinc, iodine, controversial, magnesium, iodine. Iron, sorry, magnesium and iron. All right, what else? Well, fats are super important. The omega-3-6 balance is super important. So lots of, you know, things on the omega-3 side, which would include chia and flax and hemp seeds and walnuts and algae and... think of one else. Oh, anyway, those are the ones that are the most... and fish, that's the other one. If you're not a vegetarian, fish, deep ocean fish. But make sure it's a clean source. That's going to give you good fats. Amino acids, just making sure that you get enough good quality protein and that you're absorbing it. And if you know you have some problems with stomach acid, that you're supplementing with bitters and digestive enzymes, to make sure you get enough of the amino acids from your food. Okay, and if you're not getting enough, then it's time to look at what can you do supplementation-wise. We've got glutathione, which I talked about before. There's a couple of ways you can do it. Taking a pill of glutathione is ain't going to cut it. We have liposomal, which is small packets that are fat with a hollow core, and they actually carry the glutathione or whatever other is done in liposomal right into the cells in the small intestine without having to go through the full digestive process. So this is awesome for people who are depleted. We put people on, burn victims on that. There's a lot of things we could do with it. And then dismutase, it's a common SNP, which means, you know, commonly people are low in it based on their genetics. So, you know, there's a cream that you can get that the glutathione comes in a cream along with SOD and some other antioxidants. It's called OxyCell by Apex. Very good product. Very good product. They do have an update to it. I'm looking back up here. IV glutathione is not, you know, real practical, but it's certainly something some people do when they're really badly off, especially with autoimmune. And then CoQ10 helps with energy metabolism in the cells, so that can help. And a lot of times CoQ10, along with some of the herbs we'll talk about, like one in particular, Romania, you've heard me mention, is a great combination, along with selenium, for people with Hashimoto's. And then you can add herbs. The best way to experiment with adding the herbs is to get a couple of them, read up on them, see which ones resonate with you, see if there's any contraindications. Like if you have hyperthyroidism, don't get ashwagandha. It's clearly for hypo. But pick a couple of these and start making some of the elixirs. Start with a simple elixir with one or two herbs and then just play around with it and see where you get the best energy. Or if it doesn't make a difference, you could just vary them so your body doesn't become accustomed to any of them. Okay, and then when we go through the specific patterns, there may be specific ones that are going to work better for other specific things. Like Romani is super good for people with the Hashimoto's, with autoimmune. And there's an elixir. It's a basic elixir that I put together for thyroid support. But clearly, if you've got a sensitive stomach or you're not used to some of these things, start with the basis. Start with some sort of a tea base or a water base, you know, some sort of fat base, whether it's, you know, good nuts. I put Brazil nuts, walnuts, and hemp seeds in there because those are all really good for supporting the nutrients that the thyroid needs. Coconut butter is in there because it's got medium chain triglycerides, which help heal the gut, and that's an important part of thyroid. And it's also good for the brain. It helps to support proper brain function. So I put that in there. I put in kelp and bladderwrack because those are good sea vegetables. If you don't like the taste of those in particular, change them out for another kind of sea vegetable. If you don't do sea vegetables well at all, just leave out the sea vegetables. And some people who are very sensitive to them don't do well. I put in coleus because it's a good thyroid herb, and shilajit, and cordyceps and ashwagandha, but you could choose others. You could just start with ashwagandha. Have your basics and just put ashwagandha, or just put cordyceps, or just put shilajit, or coleus, or rosemary, or any of the other ones that we'll go through for the specific patterns. And if you've got a specific pattern, then choose the ones that are going to work for your pattern. Then something for flavor. People ask me, well, I don't do well with carob or chocolate. Leave them out. They're not an integral part. They're there for flavor. If high adrenals, or you're under a lot of stress with your adrenals, it's not a good idea to stimulate with the caffeine. So leave it out and put vanilla, put cherry, you know, get some flavorings and put those in and make it taste good. I love my elixirs. I just, I just love them. They just taste good, and they really energize me. They make me feel really nourished. And then I put something sweet. I prefer to do the non-glycemic sweeteners, like Zero, which is Lohan and erythritol, Lohan alone, Lakanto, which is a combination of stevia and erythritol, or stevia or erythritol. So any number of these can be used. And we list a lot of them in the thyroid book, the recipe book. You've got to get the fresh air and sunshine. You've got to. It's for vitamin D. It's for oxygen. Thyroid needs it. Get it. Put 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day. I've started to do that because I find myself when I'm working these long days with calls at night and prepping during the day that I don't get outside. And I've been making a point of whenever I have a break, of whether it's 10 minutes or half an hour, I hop outside and I get some fresh air and sunshine. And if I only get a few breaks of 5 to 10 minutes throughout the day, I just do it whenever I can, because it's better to go out for a short period of time than not at all. So get out there and enjoy that. It's good for your thyroid. And fun is good for your thyroid. You need to incorporate whatever you think is fun into your thyroid healing protocol. So put that on your calendar. Again, even if it's only 5 minutes a day of doing something fun, of laughing, of playing, of being creative. Figure out what you like to do. And it's good for you. So don't like feel guilty because I should be working and now I'm having fun. No, having fun is part of your healing. Working is not part of your healing. It might be if you're in a career that you absolutely adore and you're, you know, making a big contribution, but it's not 100% healing. Fun is 100% healing. So the review of the foundational thyroid support, just because we went through all of these and we went through them quickly, it's not intended to be this, you know, comprehensive, but I want you to see how important it is to go all through this. We haven't done any thyroid testing yet, but yet you've got a gazillion things you could be doing to support your thyroid. So even if you don't have the funds to test, even if you don't have a doctor who'll order it, you don't live in a state where you can order it, you can get tremendous amount of result just by doing the things we talked about already. Decrease and manage stress, balance your blood sugar, optimize your digestion, support your adrenals, get good quality sleep, do gentle exercise, avoid toxic exposures and optimize detox pathways, eat whole foods, antioxidant-rich foods, add key nutrients and herbs, enjoy fresh air and sunshine, and above all, have fun. Have fun, have fun, have fun. We have all of this in your booklet. You've got copies of the slides you can print out and take notes on. And don't try to eat the whole elephant in one bite. If a lot of this stuff is new to you, pick something to start with. Pick where you feel like you have the most stress in your life and start working on that. And little by little, you will repair and you will heal. So let's talk about the thyroid resistance, because for everybody that's here that's been on thyroid medication and it's not working, it's a good chance you have thyroid resistance. It's a good chance you have under conversion or some of the other patterns. But if you have thyroid resistance, no matter what you do to fix those other things, it's not going to feel fixed because your thyroid can't, your cells can't pick it up. So you can get your thyroid functioning in tip-top shape, but if you don't address the resistance, it's not going to work. And some of the things that you do to address the resistance are incorporated into the foundational protocols. But one of the causes of the resistance is high levels of cortisol. High levels of cortisol results in high levels and production of inflammatory chemicals called cytokines and interleukins. And they can damage your thyroid tissue. So it's very common for the high levels of cortisol to damage the receptors on the cells. High homocysteine, it's a chemical, it's a blood thing that's tested as you do a test. You can test homocysteine. It's part of a pathway that it's supposed to get broken down. It's toxic to the body, but it's just an intermediate metabolite. There's a lot of toxic intermediates. But if you have the right nutrients to pull it out, you don't get troubled by it. But if those homocysteine levels build up, you can have damage to your thyroid receptors. You can also have damage to cardiovascular system. So it's a good thing to measure and get under control. And the way that you can address that is to supplement with B vitamin 6 B12, and then folate, because those three seem to have an effect on the pathway. If you look at the pathway, you see why. Vitamin A deficiency, very common, is very important for vitamin A to be able to take in the thyroid hormone. Those receptors actually have a retinoic acid dependent. So retinoic acid is a form of vitamin A. So you need the vitamin A to be able to uptake. And if you've got problems and you're not taking in enough vitamin A, or your beta carotene isn't getting converted efficiently to vitamin A, then you'll need to do a little supplementation. It doesn't have to be much. You know, 5,000 IUs a day. And that's about one drop of a liquid micellized vitamin A. So pretty easy. Zinc deficiency is another one, that those receptors have some dependency on zinc, and zinc's a very common deficiency, so making sure that you don't have it. You could get what's called the zinc tally test, a liquid zinc that you swish around in your mouth, and it tells you whether you need to, add zinc. And or you could take various kinds of tests. One of the tests that are good for detecting it is indirectly is done on a lab test, and that's called alkaline phosphatase. That's a zinc-dependent enzyme in the body that's typically measured on a liver panel. So if that's low, then it usually means there's a zinc deficiency. Then inflammation, whether the inflammation is because of the high cortisol levels or it's because of an infection somewhere, an old injury, leaky gut, inflammation needs to be dressed. So if you just work on the thyroid resistance as a starting point, a lot of the other factors are going to get better, you know, and you can work on this for a while. When you look at the labs, if somebody just has thyroid resistance, say you do it, you look at your labs, look normal. It doesn't mean that there's not a thyroid-related problem. It doesn't mean that you're a hypochondriac and dreaming up these thyroid symptoms in your sleep. It basically just means that you might have thyroid resistance, and that's what's causing the symptoms. Because chances are good that if you have a bunch of symptoms that seem to be thyroid related, say you have 5 or 6 symptoms that are classic for thyroid, low thyroid function, yet your lab tests are all normal, that doesn't mean that you have to treat each of those because they're independent. It usually means there's thyroid resistance. So address it. Let's address it. So again, as a recap of what you're going to do, you support the adrenals. There's a whole bunch of protocols for supporting the adrenals. See the page I gave you on that. You manage the stress. See the page I gave you on that. You can add some B vitamins like B6, B12, and folate. Make sure they're in activated forms. B6 should be in the form of P5P. At least part of it, half of it should be. B12 should be methylcobalamin. But it can also be hydroxy or adenosyl. I would stay away from cyanocobalamin. It's not a good form. And then folate. And we generally go for supplements L-methylfolate. We also find folate in uncooked green leafy vegetables. So if you're in a situation in your life where maybe your gut is ripped up and uncooked leafy vegetables don't feel good in your belly, then taking a folate supplement is going to be a good idea. Or drinking juice so that you get the folate from the juice, but you don't have to worry about the fiber ripping up your gut. And then finally, vitamin A and zinc. These are some basic nutritional support that you could get started with right away, even if you don't know what your pattern is and even if you haven't done the testing yet. Sound good? So lab analysis, why do we do it? We've been working on it throughout this program because you guys have been on medication, a lot of you, or had a problem with your thyroid and nobody's ever really efficiently tested it. And we've got TSH, T4, T3, free T4, free T3, antibodies, reverse T3, thyroid binding globulin. We don't do as often, but I just heard some research that said that thyroid binding globulin may be a good indirect measure of iodine status. So I'm going to research that and see if that's true. Vitamin D and an iodine load test or some other means to assess iodine status. All of these are part of the thyroid lab analysis, and these should be done if you can. Again, if you can't, you can't. And then you're going to address things from the standpoint of foundations, foundations, foundations. So let's look at the pattern specific. I don't want to get too bogged down in this. I just want to quickly review these.
We've gone through these before, and they're in the thyroid balancing booklet that you have on the website. So primary, pituitary, autoimmune, thyroid underconversion, thyroid overconversion, increased thyroid binding globulin, decreased thyroid binding globulin. We're going to look at all of those. We've already looked at the resistance, so I took it off here because everybody, we're having everybody do it. This is the stuff where you're not necessarily going to do all of it. If it's primary hypothyroidism, remember that means the thyroid just can't make enough thyroid hormone for whatever reason. What can cause that? Well, it could be radiation. Environmental exposures, exposure to fluoride, bromine, and chloride, or those particular halides blocking the receptors for iodine. It could be medications. It could be infections. And it could be insufficient nutrients that are needed to make thyroid hormone. Like you've got the, you've got obviously iodine and tyrosine, but you've got cofactors like zinc and vitamin A and iron and sodium. What does it look like? Well, it looks like a high TSH, meaning thyroid stimulating hormone is high, with either a low or a normal T4, or low normal T4. The T4 is not necessarily real low, like say your TSH is high and it's a 6, but the thyroid hormone is normal, T4 is normal. What that just means is that you've got a lot of stimulation needed from the pituitary to whip your thyroid in shape. So what kind of nutritional support? If you need iodine, you take it, but you do want to test. If you look at your protein status, make sure you have enough of it. Zinc is a critical nutrient that's also important for absorbing protein. So zinc is a good one to supplement. Selenium, copper, magnesium, vitamins A, C, D, and E, antioxidants, and vitamin B2. And then making sure your omega 3 to 6 ratio in your fats is good. So these are all the different nutrients. Again, I don't expect you to memorize these. What I expect you to do is when you're going through and mapping out your thyroid results from your tests on the chart I gave you, and you think that you have the primary hypothyroidism, you're going to explore this variety of stuff. So I'm just going to go through them so you have a sense. If you have been told, because I read your labs already, that you have a tendency towards one or the other of these patterns, then you can certainly be starting to do some of the approaches. So pituitary and hypothalamic hypothyroidism, mainly the thyroid's just fine, right? The thyroid's just fine. And in most of these patterns, the thyroid's just fine except for primary and autoimmune. But the thyroid, it's the function of the thyroid that's being messed up, and the conversion and other things. So pituitary hypothalamic means that the pituitary and the hypothalamus are just not stimulating it enough. And that's why it's not producing enough. It's just, you see this when you have super, super low levels of the pituitary hormone, but of the TSH, which is the pituitary hormone, but the thyroid hormones are normal. You can also see it with low T4 and low TSH, because typically you expect that if the T4 gets really low, then the TSH is going to kick in and say, hey, thyroid, wake up. Hey, thyroid, wake up. But if the TSH is sleeping on the job, then you're going to see both low or normal TSHs and low T4. Okay. So nutritional support, these are a few things, and these are a little bit different than what you saw on the other. You want to support the hypothalamus and the pituitary. And some of the things that can help there are sage leaf, L-arginine, zinc, magnesium, manganese, phosphatidylserine, antioxidants, B vitamins, tyrosine, and 5-HTP. So all of these. And one of the things I just didn't mention as we went through the causes, I didn't do the causes yet. Stress, like excess cortisol, can create a problem with stressing out the pituitary hypothalamus so they can't produce enough TSH. After pregnancy, the hormone changes that happen at postpartum can result in this problem. Over-medication, so taking too much thyroid hormone can suppress the pituitary for so long that it forgets to stimulate it even when the hormone levels start to go down. And this happens a lot. Neurotransmitter imbalances. So if your dopamine and serotonin are off, then it can create a problem with your thyroid. So you see how all the systems are interconnected.
And certainly, if this happens, you know, a good doctor is going to want to rule out that there's a pituitary tumor and make sure, and there's a bunch of different things that they could do to rule that out. But a tumor that's producing excess or not enough hormone, creating the situation where the pituitary doesn't create enough. So that was two patterns. Let's move into autoimmune hypothyroid. What are some of the causes? There's lots of causes and there's lots of approaches. And generally when the doctor tests for, if they test for antibodies, which they usually don't because they don't know what to do. And even if they do test for it, they generally don't address the Hashimoto's. They address the low thyroid function. Some people have autoimmune thyroid problems and their thyroid hormones look normal. That's when you want to catch it in the early stages before your thyroid has gotten destroyed. So some of the causes, well, if you've got leaky gut, if you've got heavy metals circulating in your body, if you've got food allergies, if you're eating gluten and dairy, even if you don't have allergies to them, but they can be inflammatory. If you've got mental emotional stress or inflammatory stress or trauma stress or infection stress or insulin resistance, or you're in pregnancy. Pregnancy sometimes kicks up those hormones, those antibodies. What do your labs look like? Well, TSH could be high or normal. T4 is going to look low or normal. Maybe they may both be normal. But what you're going to see is elevated antibodies to either TPO, thyroid peroxidase, or antithyroglobulin, or both. So these are the things you want to be looking for. And if you've got Hashimoto's and you've been dealing with them for a long time, any of these parameters here might be contributing factors. So there's a list of foods for Hashimoto's. I'm not going to go through them all. I gave you a nice list. I described, you know, where they come from. But basically, we're looking at vitamin A-rich, vitamin C, vitamin E, iodine-rich foods, zinc-rich foods, and selenium-rich foods. So you can read through that and just start making sure that you have a wide variety of foods and nutrients in your diet. Nutritional approaches. You want to balance the blood sugar. You want to repair the gut. You want to manage and transform your stress. Is this starting to sound familiar? We've talked about these things already. Support your adrenals. Deal with heavy metal. Clean up your environment. Support nutrient deficiencies. Support immune system and balance T cells. And we'll show you what those are in a bit. You see that most of these things we addressed if we go through the general thyroid cleanup, which is why when one of my clients who went through my blood sugar balancing program and really took to heart all these balancing things, we didn't work on her Hashimoto's, but her Hashimoto's went away. It's a consequence of restoring balance. Yeah, in some cases you have to do very specific stuff. You have to find the root cause. And sometimes just working on these general things can get you closer and closer. And then you can fine tune it with the nutrients and balancing what's called T helper cells 1 and 2. And those are part of the immune system. Here's a bunch of nutrients that have been shown to be helpful for Hashimoto's, whether there's clinical trials or just anecdotal evidence. All of these have been shown. The combination of Romania and CoQ10 with selenium is amazing. And people have seen and reported decreases in antibodies, like major decreases in as little as a month. So I'm not saying that if you do these things that you're necessarily going to have the problem go away. But what I'm saying is that if these things are out of balance, you got to get them in balance or your Hashimoto's will persist. So it's working on that balance and that balance of diet. Here's a bunch of herbs. Mushrooms, Romania, ashwagandha, schizandra berry, blue flag, eleuthero. All of these can help with Hashimoto's. Are there others? Sure. Are there others that are on the chart that I gave you earlier? Absolutely. Start somewhere and keep moving it. The biggest thing with Hashimoto's is the antioxidants and the anti-inflammatory and the leaky gut. So huge. Those are huge to get under control. All right, so we've looked at three kinds of hypothyroidism. We've looked at primary hypothyroidism, secondary, which would be pituitary, and hypothalamic, and third, we looked at antibodies. So let's look at another one that's very common, but very often overlooked. So what is under conversion, first of all? Remember, the thyroid makes mostly T4. What's active is
mostly T3. So in order to activate the thyroid hormone, we need to be able to convert from T4 to T3. It's a process that's been divinely designed. It's supposed to work, and it doesn't always work. And there's things that can cause it to underconvert, to not make enough of the T3. Some of these are just ways that your body's protecting you. So we don't want your metabolic rate to be real high and you to be out doing chores and running marathons when you've got an illness to deal with or an immune challenge. So these kind of things, illness and immune challenge, can slow down the conversion. Chronic stress. The cortisol impacts the conversion from T4 to T3. It has an effect on a deiodinase enzyme in the thyroid. Inflammation, especially something called IL-6, interleukin-6, causes it to underconvert. Blood sugar imbalances, fasting and famine, right? If you're just not eating for a long period of time, your body's going to conserve energy. Impaired liver function and impaired kidney function. And heavy metals, especially when they're in mercury, especially the ones of mercury and lead. So how do we know if somebody's underconverting? Generally speaking, we're going to see normal TSH, normal T4, or low T3. You may see a low T4, but that's not as low as the T3 comparatively. And that's why the chart that I taught you to use, and I'll review it with you again. And you might have perfectly normal TSH, and you may have higher normal T4 and low T3. So there's a lot of ways it can manifest, but that's the main pattern is normal or high on the T4 and low on the T3, that there's proportionally a disparity. And then how do you support it nutritionally? Well, selenium, that conversion from T4 to T3 is dependent on selenium and zinc. Vitamin D is important for that conversion. Iron, iodine, B6 and B12, copper, ashwagandha. And of course, we said blood sugar imbalance and stress. So that's the way you do it. You balance blood sugar and go on low stress. So that's how you deal with underconversion. And if you had a pattern that I said to you, yep, this is underconversion, I hope you wrote it down. So what's increased thyroid binding globulin? Well, excess estrogen can cause it. And that's, remember, the protein that holds up the thyroid. So if you have too much estrogen on oral contraceptives, in pregnancy, mainly the causes are increased estrogen. And so there's different scenarios that could cause you to have excess estrogen. So if you see that the T4 to T3 conversion, you see that the free T3 and the total T3, or the free T4 and the total T4, are much different, that it looks like there's more of the total than there is free, it means that there's a lot more binding globulin. And how do you test for it? Well, normal TSH, normal total T4 and total T3, and low free T3 and free T4, okay, because there's a disparity. Now, it could be that both the T4 and T3 are normal, but they're just at different ranges of normal, that the total on the T4 and T3 are on the high normal and the freeze are in the low end, that there's a disparity between the conversion. It's not as fast as you'd like it to. Some of the nutritional support, MSM, trimethylglycine, choline, beets, betaine hydrochloride, vitamin C, taurine, liver detox support, and phosphatidylcholine. These are all things that can help to bring down that thyroid binding globulin. Overconversion is more rare, and I lump it together with the decreased binding globulin because they look kind of similar, and the nutritional support is very similar. When there's an overconversion, it means that you're going to have more available thyroid hormone to be able to stimulate the cells. So that's going to cause symptoms that appear to be hyperthyroid, like, sweaty palms and fever and high racing heart, things like that. What causes it? Well, and also decreased binding globulin has similar. So we've either got overconversion producing too much of the T3, or decreased thyroid binding globulin producing too much of the free hormones, particularly T4 and T3. So a similar manifestation.
So the causes can be increased testosterone, insulin resistance, PCOS, and stress. The labs. You're going to see normal TSH and normal T4 total, but high T3 or high T4 in these patterns. How do you support it nutritionally? Insulin resistance diet. You know, the low sugar, low glycemic, support the insulin receptors, the whole thing we do in our blood sugar balancing program. Do a detox program for the liver, because a lot of this conversion happens in the liver, and maybe the liver is just overprocessing. Selenium is a supplementation you could take, somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 to 400 micrograms. Gugulu is an herb that you can take that can help. Antioxidant support and phosphatidylserine, but high levels of phosphatidylserine have been shown. Phosphatidylserine is one that some of you have been through my adrenal program know that we give that when the cortisol levels are high. So phosphatidylserine will help bring the cortisol levels down, which will help to decrease the blood sugars, which can be very effective. But it's large doses, like 2,000 milligrams a day. We have thyroid resistance again. I just put it in for completeness. You've got to deal with thyroid resistance wherever you're at. You can deal with it in whatever order you want it to, but I'm a fan of doing it at the beginning. Getting your stress under control. Testing for homocysteine and then managing it with B vitamins, folate, B6, and B12. Zinc deficiency, handling it, supplementing with it, looking at the foods that are good in it. Vitamin A, certainly looking at the foods or taking a supplement. One drop a day is pretty easy to take. Dealing with the inflammation. So that's it for the patterns. So this is a step-by-step. And I'm going to show you a chart in a moment that's in your PDF document. And this is step by step. And then once I show you that, I'm going to go through it quickly. And then you can study it and you can go through it. And it's going to be in your document. So it's basically rebalancing protocols, 6 steps. They won't make sense to you until I show you. I'm going to show you the next step and then we'll go back to that. How do you assess? Well, retake your system surveys at 4 to 6 weeks and see what, if anything's improved. Remeasure your temperature at about 4 to 6 weeks. Retest your vitamin D if you found it to be low at 2 to 3 month intervals until you can get it to be stable. Redo your iodine load test if you did it and if it was positive. Do that after 3 months. And then rerun your thyroid labs at 3 to 6 months. This is what I find to be very helpful and very useful guidelines. And then tweak, right? You want to look at it, you want to revisit and improve. What are you doing in the foundational support that you could do better, more of? What are you not doing yet that you could add? Do you need to adjust the doses of some of your supplements and herbs? Are there hidden sources of allergens or toxins that you need to address and get rid of? And that can happen. You know, maybe you're buying a pillow and it's loaded with dust mites and you're allergic to them and it's causing a reaction, an inflammatory reaction in your body. Maybe you just bought some, you know, spiffy new gluten-free food and you found out that it's not really gluten-free after all. All kinds of things. And maybe there's some deliberate ones. Assess for heavy metals. It's usually an underlying cause. Look to see if there's any heavy metal exposure. Look at the toxic load. Look at the bromine and the chloride and the fluoride. And look for mercury and lead. And then any additional testing that's needed, you can do. There are additional tests you can do to look at the shape of the gut via a stool test. You can look at the state of vitamins and minerals, right? You can actually get a sense of those functionally in the body, an organic acid test. You could do amino acid tests. You could check fatty acids. There's so many things that you can test. So don't give up if you get here. This is when you need support and you need to reach out to get some good guidance. And if you need one-on-one support, let us know, because we have coaches that we could put them out for hire so that you can get some support like you need. Revisit and improve. Okay. And you'll get better and better. And it's a good idea to remeasure because you don't know how well you've done if you don't. Yeah. So take a few deep breaths right now. And I want to avoid the feeling of overwhelm. I put this together to show you that there's a lot here to empower you to know that there's a lot that you can do before you even go and do the test, that it is step by step and you can just check things off as you do them. Is there a lot? Yes, no doubt about it, there's a lot. Is it manageable? Yes. Is it doable? Yes. Can you do it? Yes. Can you be supported and helped with what you're doing?
Absolutely.
You've got an education in thyroid right now that's beyond what most medical doctors get in their training and their residencies. Yeah, so, you know, if it feels overwhelming, great. You just got a college education in thyroid, and you can go back through it and back through it and back through it and pull out the pieces that make sense for you. But what I want you to feel is empowered. I want you to feel like, wow, I can do this. These are things that are going to take me time. They're not going to be easy, super easy, but man, I can do this. And we have medical doctors in our practitioner training program, and they've basically said, boy, why didn't we learn this stuff in school? The steps that you're going to follow. So you're going to take this chart, and this looks like, oh my God, this is overwhelming. It's overwhelming. No, we're going to do this easily. So you're going to take your labs. The lab values are down the left-hand side. So we have total, we have TSH, and you're gonna look at your TSH scores. Is your TSH high or low? And you're just gonna just highlight it. If it's high, you're gonna, every place you see the H, you're gonna put H. So now you know that based on your TSH, you're in one of two patterns, right? The total T4, then you put that in. Is it normal, is it high, or is it low? And wherever you see an N, an H, or an L, you just highlight or circle. Once you've gone through every lab you've taken, then you go back and you say, well, what pattern do I look like I have? You may have a few spatterings of one or the other, because we have normals in there, by the way. So, you know, normal doesn't mean there's a problem. You may have a whole bunch of normals, and if everything's normal, you have thyroid resistance. But you want to look through this and say, okay, I have low here and high there, and it looks like I've got five marks for hypothyroid pituitary. That's something I need to be looking at. Okay, maybe I have a bunch of marks for the thyroid under conversion. That's what you need to be looking at. So you're actually looking and using kind of a technology to help you to understand this before you actually get the full understanding, which you may never do, because after all, that's not your chosen career. You're not an endocrinologist after all. So that's what you're gonna do. You're gonna mark them. And then based on where most of your circles fall, that was step two, you're gonna determine what pattern or patterns, it could be more than one pattern, you likely have. Then you're gonna find your pattern in two places. One is on those lists that are in the document and are also on the slides that says pituitary hypothyroidism, simple. The other thing you can do is you can mark your pattern. Yeah, so across the top it'll tell you your pattern, right? So you say, maybe you come up with, I have under conversion and autoimmune. All right, so then you go to the next chart down here, and what you do is you click those, under conversion and autoimmune. Those are those two, right? And then you're going to look to see what are the nutrient things, what do they have in common that address both? Those are the places to start, right? Well, here's something that addresses everything. Essential fatty acids. Well, guess I need those, right? Let's go down. So you're just looking for everything that shows up in those two columns. Make a list of the things that showed up in those two columns or highlighted on here. And that's where you start. Anyhow, you get the idea. You're going to mark it in the chart. And then those are some of the nutrients you might want to start with. All right? And most of the things that I talked about in the presentation were here. The last thing that I want to show you is the T regulatory cells. Remember we talked TH1 and TH2 support. This is more advanced treatment for your Hashimoto's if you have it, or more advanced approach. And at the end of your document, you're going to see a page that looks like this. There's T helper cells 1 and 2, and one can be dominant over the other. And there's specific conditions. Like Hashimoto's, usually you have a TH1 dominant. Not always, but usually you have a TH1 dominant. Whereas also ulcerative colitis, you may have a TH2 dominant. What you might find is that certain of these nutrients make you feel either better or worse. And that's a good way to know whether you have TH1 or TH2 dominant. If every time you take echinacea or try to put mushrooms into an elixir, you feel awful. But when you drink a cup of coffee or have some quercetin, you feel great. Oh, you probably have a TH1 dominant and you're overstimulating that and making yourself worse, and you have low on the TH2 side. So the other things that are listed there would probably be helpful as well. So if you ever take a supplement or a nutrient and you don't feel well, it's probably a lot of underlying reasons. But to support both and balance both, we've got our basic stuff that you've seen over and over. Probiotics, vitamin A, vitamin E, Boswellia, which is really good muscle spasmy, anti-inflammatory, enzymes, and turmeric. It's basically step by step. Once you've got this, once you've gone through it, if you haven't done your labs, don't even bother with this section yet. But if you've done your labs, go back and look through it and see if you can get some, make some sense of this. You're going to mark your findings on your labs on step one. On step two, you're going to kind of look at that and see what patterns do you most exhibit. You're going to find your pattern on the nutrient chart. You're going to make appropriate changes to your diet and lifestyle and begin with a few of the major herbs and supplements to support your thyroid health that are listed in that column for you. That's called thyroid pattern specific rebalancing. Okay, and then reevaluate and rerun your labs.